But what McLuhan goes on to say is that as each medium allows us to do things more effectively, it also intensifies our lives. And that is uncomfortable. And so often what people do is they take a medium and they numb part of it, or they amputate part of it.
Welcome to the Plastic Podcast. I'm Robert Davis. Today, J. Robert Parks and I will talk about the new David Fincher film. It's about a popular website that a lot of us use daily. And the film wonders which of the website's founders could be, well, probably is, the Zodiac Killer, and which of his two rivals are actually the same person, even though they sometimes punch each other in the face and the gut, tell each other jokes, make each other jealous, etc. It's called The Social Network.
I think I've come up with something.
That looks good. That looks really good.
It's going to be online any second.
Who should we send it to first?
Just a couple of people. The question is, who are they going to send it to?
The site got 2,200 hits within 2 hours.
1,000. 22,000.
Wow. You called me a bitch on the internet.
Doesn't anybody have a sense of humor?
The internet's not written in pencil, Mark. It's written in ink.
I think maybe we shouldn't shut it down before we get into trouble.
You stole our website.
They're saying we stole the Facebook.
I know what it says.
So did we? They came to me with an idea. I had a better one.
You made the Facebook.
Who are the girls?
Yeah, groupies.
This idea is potentially worth millions of dollars.
Millions?
$1 million isn't cool. You know what's cool?
You?
$1 billion.
We don't need him.
Let's sue him in federal court.
We're going to get left behind.
Moving faster
what
than
any
mean,
of us ever imagined
get
it
left
would
behind.
You're a gentleman of Hartford. You don't sue people.
This is our time.
It's gonna be like I'm not a part of Facebook.
You're not a part of Facebook.
I can't wait to stand over your shoulder and what you write is a check.
Is there anything that you need to tell
your
me?
Actions could have permanently destroyed everything I've been working on.
We have been working
Did
on.
You like being a joke? Do you want to go back to that?
Mark! You better lawyer up, because I'm coming back for everything.
Hey, J. Robert.
Hey, Rob.
So today we're going to be talking about one of the, I'd say, most anticipated films of the year, and certainly one of the most popular, if you judge from people on my Facebook stream.
Yes.
And maybe that's no accident. The film is called The Social Network, and it is about that stream. Mm. Are you one of the people who is raving about this film left and right?
No, I'm going to be the contrarian today. You?
I believe I may be a little contrarian as well.
Yes.
Let's see who's most contrarian.
Yes, for all the folks who've seen this movie and wondered what the big deal was, you've come home. You have friends on the podcast.
All right, so tell me, what did you think of the movie?
You know, I don't like it. It's I'm not even sort of even mixed on it. There's lots of things to admire. You know, it's directed by David Fincher, and he clearly is a master of his craft. You know, he's done movies like Fight Club and Zodiac and Seven, and you know, clearly knows what he's doing behind the camera. You know, it's written by Aaron Sorkin, who you know is most famous for doing TV shows like The West Wing, and again the dialogue in this film is very, very punchy and sharp and often funny, and so there's that to like. And I'm sure we'll talk about Jesse Eisenberg's performance in the role of Mark Zuckerberg. But he's great.
The founder of Facebook.
The founder of Facebook, that's
right.
And
CEO.
And so, so even with all of those things, though, I find the movie very, very frustrating. And I'll try not to sound like some sort of scold as we go through today. But there's just, to me, a lot of clear problems with the film. And it's always frustrating to be in the position where you don't like something and almost everyone else seems to. But I don't know. I'm not quite sure why people like it so much. And not sure why people aren't seeing it the way I am. But let me let you sort of talk about why you're mixed or contrarian.
I'll take mixed as my label. And I'll put myself in the category of someone who is anticipating the movie. Mm. I'm not a huge David Fincher fan, but I think I've liked most of his movies. Mm-hmm. I liked Fight Club. I liked Zodiac. I haven't loved any of his movies. But I was looking forward to this, I think in part because of the trailer. Mm. The trailer had sort of two halves. Mm. The first half I found very compelling for mm-hmm. a trailer. The second half made the movie seem like it was just going to be sort of a biopic. And I was hoping it wasn't going to be that.
Yeah.
I was hoping it was going to be the first half mm-hmm. because it seemed like that was going to attempt something that's really difficult, which is for lack of a better phrase, present a history of the present.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to try to understand where we are now and why.
Yeah.
Why do 500 million people go onto Facebook? You know, that's the number of registered users they have right now.
Yeah.
Why do that many people go to Facebook to interact with their friends and
you know, how is this happening? What does this mean?
Yeah.
It's hard to do that because you really don't know sometimes. It takes a lot of time before you can figure out why things mean what they do, especially in the technology world.
Yeah.
Facebook could be subsumed by some other company, could be overrun by someone else, you know, tomorrow. So it would be very hard to do that, and yet that's what I was hoping for, because that's sort of what I sort of felt coming from the first half of the trailer. It turns out the movie is entirely the second half of the trailer, a sort of procedural description of this happened and this happened and this happened. And I find it really hard to believe that someone will care how someone's shares were diluted, 10, 20 years from now. I'm surprised they care now.
We should probably just set it up for people who don't know the history of Facebook, because the movie sort of assumes you do a little bit, but then it helps you along. You know, Mark Zuckerberg was a student at Harvard, and sort of this brilliant computer whiz, had done a few various things before he got to Harvard and at Harvard. But he founded Facebook basically when he was a student. But then in the aftermath of its success was then sued by fellow students who thought that he had ripped off their idea, and sued by other people who had actually helped him found Facebook, who then he was on the outs from. And so the movie is principally concerned with, one, how Facebook started, but then also throughout the film we are cutting to the lawsuits and sort of depositions of Zuckerberg and the other people who are suing him for either stealing his idea or giving them the shaft. So
and
I agree. I think I told someone as I came out of the movie that it felt to me like watching TMZ or E! News talking about Lindsay Lohan and Paris Hilton. These incredibly unlikable people who are doing things that have nothing to do with me. You know, like you say, I mean, why should I possibly care, you know, if someone's shares have been diluted or if someone is getting $10 million or not getting $10 million. And yet the movie treats this as if this is actually important. And these sort of legal wranglings are important. And yet there's also this tone of moralizing that comes through the film, you know, that, you know, we're better than these people. Yeah, they might be richer than us, a lot richer than us, but they're awful people. And don't we feel good because we're not as awful as they are? And so that kind of cluck, cluck, clucking just really annoyed me as the movie went on. And this sense that somehow I'm supposed to care about this, even though these people are just across the board unlikable and irritating. You can see I'm getting mile is getting rise.
Now see, this is already interesting because I don't think they come across as awful people, and I think that I think Mark Zuckerberg in fact comes across quite well in the movie. And here's what's, I almost don't even want to discuss this because this is what I hear people discussing about this movie is who do you like, who do you side with? And people do seem to side with different people. Some people think that Zuckerberg looks terrible. Some people think he looks, like genius who deserved all of this and he had these hangers on who tried to take it for doing nothing. But the interesting thing about this is that this is clearly by design. You know, it's so carefully balanced that the movie doesn't pick a side. And it reminds me of these documentaries sometimes that you see where the filmmakers claim that they've presented both sides and that both sides love it. And so they feel that they have done their duty, you know, that they've pleased both sides, when in reality they haven't told the truth, they haven't taken a side. And I always feel like that's copying out. And in some ways, that's what this movie has done. It has tried to balance it so well to create this discussion, which it seems to have done pretty well, because that's what I hear just walking down the street after the movie. In fact, people are talking about whether Saverin deserved, his share of for being a co-founder, or whether Zuckerberg should have gotten what he got and all that. And yet, because it's balanced in that way and because it doesn't take a side on that, I think that means the film is really just a character study. And then if that's true, then what is it telling us about Mark Zuckerberg? It's presuming to know some things about Mark Zuckerberg, I think, that the reasons why he is driven to do the things he does. Is it really about wanting to know this girl? Is it really about wanting to be in these groups? Is it really, you know, it just seems very, very simplistic as a character study, especially assuming the filmmakers don't know him.
Yeah. Well, and clearly, even if they do know him, they sort of choose to present him in ways that are really extraordinarily superficial. because I think you're right, at least in this sense, that the movie is balanced, if such a word. I, by the end of the film, I sort of felt bad for Zuckerberg, in part because the movie treats him as if he's really pathetic. As with all sort of Hollywood films that have to be done in 2 hours, like this one is, you know, our characters have to have motivations. And so we have to know those motivations very early. You know, we have to know them by page 8 on the script, so to speak. And so in this portrayal of Zuckerberg, you know, he has two sort of main motivations that are related. The first is that he's been jilted by this girl who won't, you know, sort of take him seriously. And two, he's been sort of jilted by the preps, so to speak, at Harvard, you know, the people who actually have a lot of prestige or money. And so jilted by both of these people, he has this tremendous need for sort of revenge. And that apparently drives him everywhere. And that's the point of the film, or at least that's the point of his character. And I wouldn't have such a problem with that if this was a fictional person. Because then you're just telling a 2-hour story. But I think it's a very dangerous move when you're talking about someone who actually lives and is real. And for most people, they don't know him well, of course. And so this is going to be the portrait they have of him in their mind. And the movie doesn't tell us at all that he's had a girlfriend for like 7 years. I mean,
the real one,
real girlfriend. I mean, who
the real Mark Zuckerberg,
right? The real Mark Zuckerberg, you know, that, and actually sort of while he was creating Facebook, he was dating her. Whereas the movie wants to make it seem like he's this pathetic and lonely guy, particularly in the end, which I find genuinely infuriating, that, you know, that somehow he does all of this because he's desperately lonely. Well, maybe he is kind of lonely. Who knows? I mean, people can be lonely and still dating. But it's not because he's a pathetic loser who can't get a girl. And yet I think the movie sort of wants to present him that way. And I find that very, very ugly, a very ugly move to sort of take a real person and caricature him so much like that.
Now, a movie that pops into my head all of a sudden is... Citizen Kane. You mentioned to me that people were comparing this to Citizen Kane. I didn't realize that. I haven't read a lot about the film.
Right.
What people's opinions of the film are. People are actually comparing it to Citizen Kane.
Yeah, they see the Saverin character, sort of his business partner, as, you know, sort of like I forget the character's name in Kane, but Kane's two friends, Leland and Bernstein, who sort of start, you know, the newspaper with him, and then sort of get shuffled off. And there's other things. Scott Renshaw, I think, has written on this, where he sort of tracks it from a narrative point of view, how the arc of Zuckerberg's life is presented in the same arc as Kane's life.
Okay.
And the people around Kane are presented in the same way.
Yeah. Kane being a fictional character based on this sort of, this is a test of your theory or a test of your mm-hmm. opinion on this, I guess.
Yeah.
It was a fictional character based very closely on a real person.
Yeah. Right.
Is that legit? Yeah, William Randolph Hearst.
It's I was thinking about that. And that's a great question. For me, there's a fundamental difference between the way Kane is portrayed in Citizen Kane, as sort of maybe as negative as a portrayal as that might be, and Zuckerberg. I was reading an interview with Aaron Sorkin where he talked about that his idea of Zuckerberg, and the way that comes about in the movie, is that he's this really irritating guy for an hour and 55 minutes, and then he becomes a tragic hero in the end. I don't know what movie Sorkin is referring to, but it's not The Social Network. He's not tragic. He's pathetic at the end. Whereas with Kane, there is real depth to the character. It's not as sort of ugly as it turns out for Kane in the end. There is a real sense of why he has gone this way. That's a complicated reason. You know, mm-hmm. we can sort of point to Rosebud, but that's not the whole story.
Well, in some ways it proves your point, because the quest of the people in the movie is that they want to figure out what Rosebud is. And if they knew that one thing, it would explain everything.
Yeah.
Well, we find the answer to that at the end and explains nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
No, that's exactly right. Whereas in The Social Network, you know, we set it up at the very beginning. Zuckerberg is jilted. And then at the end, he is desperately trying to get that girl back, as if everything revolves around her. And I just find that really distasteful.
Yeah. I guess there's another way to look at the end, which is that not everything revolves around that, but that he too is a lowly, he's like any one of us who mm-hmm. goes on to Facebook and, you know, adds someone and waits to see if they're going to actually respond.
Yeah.
He too.
No, it's, I don't know. Do you get the sense that the rest of the movie presents him as just like us? I mean,
no, I think he's presented as a genius and as deserving, more deserving of the wealth that he has received than anyone else in the movie.
Yeah.
And actually, my friend Brian Darr had a very astute tweet about this, I thought, which was, and Brian listens to this podcast sometimes, so Brian, if you're listening, if I've gotten this paraphrasing wrong, please let me know. But he said that he feels like Saverin is the audience surrogate.
I agree with that.
And yet, the sort of, and yet he's not deserving of Zuckerberg's riches, and therefore neither are we.
Mm. Yeah, I
according to the film,
I think the movie's. I completely agree that Saverin is the audience surrogate here. But I do think that clearly the film sets up the Winklevoss twins and their business partners, sort of the people who initially approach Zuckerberg to help create this excuse me, this Harvard connection, this, you know, Facebook prototype. I think they are clearly shown to be, you know, not deserving of what happens. You know, that there's this great line in the film where they talk about, we are the creators of Facebook. And Zuckerberg says, if you were the creators of Facebook, you would have created Facebook. And, and I thought, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. But I do think that Saverin is a more sympathetic character in the sense that he is sort of long suffering in the face of Zuckerberg's, you know, sort of social awkwardness, as well as his passion to sort of do this thing in this way. And Saverin's main flaw is just that he trusts his friend too much, whereas clearly Zuckerberg doesn't really know what that means. And so in that sense, I think that we're supposed to identify more with Saverin and be happy that, you know, in the end he gets something.
I think the best I can say about this movie is that it's a study of hangers-on, what it means to be the legitimate owner of an idea versus the people who are just sort of constellations around you. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it explores that idea enough, if that's the central idea.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not fair to want it to be the central idea, but there are a lot of reasons that many people came up with this idea in real life and in the movie.
Yeah.
Even more people did in real life than are presented in the movie. There are other people who lay claim to Facebook. But it's because there are, you know, these things happen in time for a reason. You know, there's also Friendster and MySpace.
Yes.
And there are, you know, those already existed. And it's not hard to see why those existed.
Yeah.
I have friends who used to sort of make fun of Facebook. These are tech developer friends who used to make fun of Facebook for being the new AOL.
Yeah.
You know, this sort of enclosed world where you get to chat with your friends and interact with people, sort of like people did on the old closed world of AOL. But I sort of feel like, you know, defending Facebook in the face of that sort of criticism, because there is a reason that that model recurs over and over again, even as technology advances.
Yeah. Let me just sort of interrupt, because I think the movie gets it wrong. I mean, I think you're right that at its core, the movie is this character study and not a particularly interesting character study. But I do think the movie is trying to say something about Facebook and something about the sort of the social networking world that we find ourselves in. But it can't do that very well, right? Because it's got so many other things that the movie seems to be trying to do. But one of the things that I think is just flat out wrong is the movie seems to be very much takes the idea that Facebook succeeded because it was first. And there's this really strange scene about two-thirds of the way through the film where the Winklevoss twins they row crew. And there's this quite long scene, given how unimportant these people are in the film, where they are in this race, this regatta. And it's this very, very close race, but in the end they lose. And so the fact that they are not first is of course everything. They're second, but you know, who cares about being second? And clearly I think Fincher sees this as a metaphor for Facebook. Facebook was first by a nose, and therefore it was completely successful. But that's only true if you ignore things like Friendster. You know, it's only true if you ignore things like MySpace and all the other things that came around. I remember three or four years ago, when I sort of first got on Facebook, and not that I was an early adopter or anything, but there I was. And but I remember telling someone, I suspect Facebook will be around for about 18 months. And then something else will come along. Just because that's what had happened with Friendster, that's what had happened with MySpace, and I assume that's what would happen with Facebook. So it's just flat out wrong to say that Facebook has been successful because it was first. Clearly it was successful for other reasons, but yet the movie doesn't want to say that.
That's an unusual scene too. It's by far the most stylized scene in the movie. The music, the look, it's shot in the way of this experimental filmmaker Olivio Barbieri.
Really,
which I love his stuff, but it's it's sort of weird. Suddenly I feel like we're in an advertisement or something. That was a really unusual approach to that. There's another way probably to read the scene, which is that it isn't about being first in time, but about the winner takes all, and the second place means nothing. And so these guys were second in, you know. But I agree with you that it does sort of give short shrift to all the stuff that was going on around Facebook, that it sort of implies this genius that came up with this idea when there are lots of explanations for it. There's a really interesting book called Stealing MySpace that was published just sort of before Facebook really became as big as it is. And it explains a lot about how, or it attempts, it's a really great history of MySpace, which is sleazier than the history of Facebook and a very entertaining story to hear. However, when the book tries to explain why MySpace did so much better than Friendster is where it goes wrong, because they sort of pin most of it on the fact that Friendster wanted you to sort of be yourself in there. You have your one identity in there, where MySpace let you sort of create anybody. You'd have any name you want. You can be whoever you want in MySpace. And that's why they became huge. But, you know, if you just fast forward like 2 years past that, suddenly Facebook, which is all about just being yourself, you know, most people have a single Facebook account that is their real name and real email address, you know, totally stomping on MySpace. Yeah. So it's very difficult to explain why things in the present are succeeding and doing what they're doing.
No.
The fact is, though, that people are interested in doing this sort of thing.
Yeah.
There are these network effects of why it's helpful for everyone to be in one place. And so everyone gravitates toward one. It's hard to say why that one wins, but currently it's Facebook.
Yeah. And you're right that it'd be hard in that in book form to describe why that is true. And so when the Social Network movie does it, it just feels false. You know, there's that scene when we first meet Sean Parker, who was the founder of Napster, and he's woken up with his beautiful blonde in his bed. And she's a Stanford student. And she goes off to take a shower, and he suddenly sort of sees her open laptop, which has Facebook, and suddenly he's transfixed. You know, it's like he sees the homepage of Facebook, and suddenly he's like, "Oh, that is the future!" And I'm thinking, "Really? That one little page sort of turn it on for you?" Eh?
I have a mundane explanation for that, supposing it were true.
Yeah,
and I don't think this is the movie's explanation for it. I think your description is right for what the movie wants to say. But suppose he knew all about Friendster and MySpace and knew this was a hot new thing that everybody's going to be doing. And so he sees one that he can seize on and jump into the beginning. And there we go.
Maybe so. Maybe so. I mean, you can't imagine. I mean, let me ask you this. Do you think the portrayal of Sean Parker is balanced? I mean, he just comes off as this unbelievable sleaze to me. But...
Yeah, I don't know the guy at all. He does.
I mean,
he does.
When I got to the end of that film, I was thinking, man, I wonder if he can sue. I mean, he is either really, really awful, and I'm trying not to swear here, but you almost sort of want to swear, or he's been defamed. You know, although the performance by Justin Timberlake is lots of fun, I will say that.
He's often fun. What was that, the movie Southland Tales, which is a total mess.
Yes.
But there's this point in the middle around Justin Timberlake that's really
great.
Great. Really cool.
Yeah, very, very cool. No, I agree, Justin Timberlake, and he's great on Saturday Night Live. He's really funny. Well, speaking of acting, though, I need to just sort of step back and give the movie its props. I think Jesse Eisenberg as Mark Zuckerberg is really fantastic. He has a great sort of manic energy, but it's really controlled. It's the sort of performance that I think would have been easy to sort of lose control. And yet I think he's really, really great. And so for a while, I actually was just enjoying the film, watching him as frustrating as I was getting with other things about the movie. I thought that his portrayal was award worthy. I think it's great. I don't know if you thought the same, but
yeah, I thought he was good. Mm-hmm. He's a lot of why Zuckerberg, I think, comes across as good as he does, mm-hmm. or as positively as he does in this movie, is because he just seems like a likable actor. And
oh, okay.
I don't know, you know, likable in the sense that he has these, he has the best lines mm-hmm. in all of these tense situations,
yeah.
and yet he just seems like he'd rather be coding, and something about that is kind of fun. And I will also say that the bits of technical jargon that are in the movie, mm-hmm. Two things about them. One is they're presented in kind of an exciting way. My wife sort of disagrees about that part of this. She didn't like when they were spewing a lot of jargon.
Oh.
But I think the scene where he's hacking, it's about as exciting as you could make that.
Yeah.
And also the jargon there is...
Are you talking about the face mash?
Early on, yeah.
Yeah, where that's a great scene.
Yeah, it was this kind of hyper evening of a late night session of hacking to put together this really quick site mm-hmm. Where he has to gather all the faces of girls that he can find on the Harvard campus. And so he does... some nefarious things to access those. But the jargon that he's spewing is right. Mm. I mean, wget and Perl and Emacs, and it's not just, sometimes movies are really awful at this, you know,
yeah.
they've gotten a few words and they throw them in ways that are really weird. And, you know, it made sense to me.
Mm. Now, you said you were mixed, so there obviously are things that you liked about the film. What stood out to you, or what did you enjoy?
Well, those were a couple of those small ones right there. I think that as a sort of a description of what happened, it's pretty exciting mm-hmm. given what it really was.
Okay.
I mean, this kind of like intrigue about who has how many shares, it doesn't sound very exciting. It isn't very exciting, frankly. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's exciting if you're one of those people and you're going to, it's the difference between, you know, a few billion and many, many billion, or a few hundred, a few tens of millions and billions. But it's not exciting to anyone anyone else is in the room who's mm-hmm. not getting that paycheck. And yet the movie does make it kind of exciting. You know, like, The Insider, Michael mm-hmm. Mann's movie, which was about, you know, a whistleblower in the cigarette industry. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like it's very exciting, but that was a real nail-biter, that movie.
I found that one a lot more riveting. Maybe it's because I don't particularly care about legal wrangling. I've never been a big, you know, courtroom movie kind of person or courtroom TV kind of person.
Yeah.
But all the depositions, which are, you know, they're a fairly significant part of the film, I found them quite repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
And I also found them troubling in this sense, that it's fairly clear to me that Sorkin and Fincher want to present Zuckerberg and the people who are litigating against him as childish almost. You know, they bicker like teenagers. And then you have the adults sort of in the room as the lawyers.
Yeah.
And it felt, again, very condescending to me. There was a quote I saw from Sorkin in another interview where he talks about, you know, I've never written this young before. And it felt like that. It felt like some guy writing, you know, who's in his 40s, writing about, you know, those teenagers, you know, and the condescension just felt pretty, you know, pretty thick to me. And
I often don't care for this structure where we have some sort of, most of the movie is a flashback, but there's this frame around it that is a little bit further in the future and where things are very different, you know. And we see fairly early on that this good business partner of his is suing him.
Yeah.
And it's sort of dangled in front of you for a long time as you wonder, ooh, I wonder where the rift happens. I wonder how it happens, you know. And I always think, just tell us how the rift happens. Come on. Let's get there already. Stop teasing us. You know, a movie that comes to mind is Sidney Lumet's All the President's Men.
Mm.
And I like this as a comparison because I don't think All the President's Men is, it's a classic,
yeah.
but I don't think it's particularly insightful about mm-hmm. what happened. It's just sort of, you know, this happened and this happened
yeah,
and
procedural.
This happened. It is a procedural, but it has two very charismatic stars
oh, yes.
who put faces on people who you've read in the paper, probably more glamorous faces than they deserve.
Oh, indeed.
But you know, it's sort of fun to watch because of that, and it is hung on this very important event in our country's history.
Right.
Where this is in similar ways putting sort of, you know, more flowery faces on real people who probably don't have this many good lines or aren't snorting this much coke or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I just can't figure out what the significance
yeah.
of any of this is or will be.
No, I agree. And maybe part of the problem is for me, and probably you are the same, is that I actually don't care that much about Facebook. I mean, just in my own life, it's there. I use it. It provides some kind of service of keeping in touch with people. But if Facebook suddenly went down for, you know, a week, My life would go on almost unchanged. But I do get the sense from other people that they have a lot more invested in Facebook. And so therefore, for them, the movie provides that sense of, oh, this is an important part of my life. And now I get to know more about this important part of my life.
Yeah.
In the same way that, you know, celebrities are important parts of people's lives. And so if you actually know what's going on with Lindsay Lohan, you somehow feel more informed. I mean, it does feel that way to me.
Well, I think that's why this movie is a savvy business decision, yeah. You know, to make this movie right now mm-hmm. and quickly while Facebook is still as relevant as it is.
Yeah.
And we're sort of talking like Facebook is going to be gone tomorrow. And I have a feeling it may have some longevity. We have no idea. We just have no way of knowing, but they're really smart. They seem like they're good at what they do.
Yep.
They're clearly better than MySpace, you know, the horribly ugly site. So just aesthetically, it's mm-hmm. a nice experience and environment. And I think the more that people have invested in the site, as you said, many people are very invested in the site, and I have, you know, all my family is on there. I have my kids' photos on there to share with the grandparents and all of that. The more that all of us have things in there, the more longevity I think they will have, the more hooked in they are. Mm. There's this, it's a little bit like eBay in that way. You know, it's the auction site, not because it's beautiful, but because it's where all the auctions are.
Right.
You know?
Right.
If you're going to sell something, you don't go where people aren't. Mm-hmm. People sort of forget that Amazon, for a while, it was rumored they were going to introduce auctions, and everyone was predicting this will kill eBay because Amazon is huge. They're hugely successful. They're a great retailer. Well, Amazon did introduce auctions, and it fizzled, and they don't have auctions anymore because, you know, there is this network effect of it's helpful sometimes to have a central repository where everybody goes. And I think the longer Facebook is around and the more people are invested in it, the more that's true. Mm. However, these things change, so we'll see.
But I know that a lot of people, or at least some people that I read, think the movie is really important. Because it says something about how our world has changed because of Facebook. In other words,
what does it say?
Well, that's not quite clear. When people sort of write about it, it's like, wait, I'm not quite sure what you're saying here. But the idea that friends have changed, your ideas of friends have changed somewhat. The way in which we interact with people, like to give a very simple example, the movie doesn't say this, but this came up in my class yesterday. We were talking about how ideas of romance have changed in the last 10 years. And we were talking about that in the context of reality TV, how reality TV sort of shapes and warps our ideas of romance. But then one student said, yeah, and it's a really big deal when the guy actually changes his Facebook status to say he's in a relationship with you. And I was thinking, really? That's a big deal, eh? And I was thinking, oh, well, that is interesting. Not because that Facebook has changed that, because I think Facebook is a symptom, not the cause. But just how our ideas have changed because of how we interact online in a variety of ways. You know, how we interact through texting, how we interact through blogging, how we interact through sort of mediated environments, of which Facebook is one, but not the only one. But I don't think the movie's really saying anything about that. I think people are projecting their own ideas onto the movie.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah, I don't think the movie has a lot of that at all. There is the scene where Severin's girlfriend confronts him and about why his relationship status is single. And there was this chuckle in the theater where I saw it, because I think everybody has experienced a little bit of this or knows people or is connected to people on Facebook who have experienced this. So it was just sort of a knowing chuckle, but I didn't feel like the movie was exploring different avenues of friendship or anything like that.
No.
You know, I whenever I was thinking about how I wished the movie had been something different, maybe unfairly, I was thinking about how, even though it's very difficult to talk about the present or why things are the way they are right now, there's a credible way to explore it or wonder about it. And this movie doesn't wonder really about that stuff. Instead, it's telling us a story, and it knows these things, and it's telling us what those things are. It doesn't necessarily maybe know who's right and doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
But I think of like Gus Van Sant's movie Elephant.
Mm.
This is another example of a movie that is based on fact but is fictionalized. Right. So it's sort of the Citizen Kane type of thing, where I suppose this is about Columbine, but because it isn't named Columbine in the movie, it's something different. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, licensed to do something different. But I feel like that movie was sort of untelling a story that had been told. There is a story that was told about why Columbine happened. There were actually multiple stories. Well, it's because they were into this, or they were into that, or because this happened and no one did this.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie sort of shows all of them in this sort of a fever dream. You know, they're all there. It skirts all of them mm-hmm. and commits to none of them, mm-hmm. which is a really fascinating way to sort of undo the story that's been written.
Yeah.
And I don't think that this movie, by avoiding to explore this stuff, it's not undoing the story either. It's just not telling the story.
Yeah, and I do think that part of the problem is the movie wants to do a variety of things, or at least wants to seem like it's doing a variety of things, and therefore it can't really do any of them well. And so when people sort of, when various people graft on to why they really like this film, and they say, oh, it's about this, and then someone else says it's about this, and someone else says, oh, no, it's about this, and then people then say, wow, look, what a great movie. It's about all these things. Then I have to say, no, Citizen Kane was about a lot of things. Social Network is not about any of them very well. Maybe it sort of, you know, hints at what a movie could have been about that, but I don't think it is that, and frustratingly so to me.
I think this idea you just mentioned about people being curious about this thing that's a part of their lives mm-hmm. and part of maybe why they were interested in going to see this movie in the first place.
Sure.
That is an interesting phenomenon. I mean, we've all just sort of gradually adopted this this thing. Mm-hmm. And one of the criticisms people have of social networks is that they're making money off of our our lives. Of course, that's true of all companies. But and they're providing a service, and I understand, I have nothing against that. But it is a little weird that we have all sort of chosen to do this, mm-hmm. share our lives in such interesting ways, interesting in quotes, I guess, mm-hmm. That we've developed this sort of new form of very loose friendship with acquaintances or people we used to know but don't particularly have anything in common with anymore. Everybody knows these patterns that show up on Facebook, and it's mm-hmm. interesting to see them played out in a computer. Mm-hmm. And it's encouraging to me that people are curious about this mm-hmm. and want to know the story. And I think I'm glad that people are sort of that some amount of that is satisfied by this movie. Mm-hmm. But for me, I feel like there could be yet another movie about, it could be called The Social Network. Yeah. It could be called something very similar that is about all of these aspects that we're talking about that are really not in the movie.
I think this is maybe ironically so. It's indicative of a real trend in culture, which is towards the simplification of so much, that in a media saturated culture in which we are just bombarded by things, we no longer have the ability, as we once might have, to go into depth. We are much more comfortable with surface. I was doing a seminar this summer on Marshall McLuhan, who sort of explored this way back in the 60s in really interesting ways. But one of McLuhan's really, I think, powerful theories is that every medium is an extension of ourselves. Every medium allows us to do something more effectively. You know, so like the wheel is an extension of our feet. The horse and cart is an extension of our back. But what McLuhan goes on to say is that as each medium allows us to do things more effectively, it also intensifies our lives. And that is uncomfortable. And so often what people do is they take a medium and they numb part of it, or they amputate part of it. And so as I was doing this seminar, I was trying to think of what are modern day examples of that, because McLuhan was writing in the 60s. And it suddenly got to thinking about blogs. And, you know, blogs were, of course, really huge 4 or 5 years ago. You had a blog. I had a somewhat short-lived blog. Most of our friends who do movies writing had blogs. And a blog was an extension of our ability to write as much as we wanted, as often as we wanted. Because even for those of us who had the privilege of writing for publications, we still could only write so much, so often. But a blog, you could write, and indeed were encouraged to write as often as you wanted, as much as you wanted. But that leads to more intensity. That leads to more difficulty, because who can keep up with that? Ergo Twitter. Most interesting film criticism has moved away from blogs onto Twitter, because that is a much easier way to communicate.
And in case there's anyone listening who doesn't know what Twitter is, it's you can post things, but they can be at most 140 characters
long. Right. That's right. And so if you want to post your feelings on a movie, you have to do it in a very pithy way, in 140 characters, you know, 40 words, 30 words, and at most. But of course, that is a a gross simplification of a blog, but it's a much more, in our sort of hectic, frenzied society, a much more comfortable way, I guess, to talk about movies and even to read about movies. Who has time to read someone's 1,000-word piece on the social network? Much easier just to see what people have tweeted about it. But I think that there is, to come back to the social network and what we were talking about before, this sort of simplification of communication, of which Facebook is not the cause but merely a symptom, is seeping into whole realms of communication, of which, so that we can see a movie that I really do think is very simple in what it's trying to do, and yet people can find it to be profound because we've become so much more comfortable with that shallow surface.
It's an interesting idea.
And a long-winded one.
Well, I like Twitter too, and it's I think it remains to be seen how it all shakes out. You know, it's an interesting tool also. Like, for example, I didn't go to Toronto's festival this year, and I made this little list of my favorite tweeters, the 15 people who I want to hear what they have to say. They're in Toronto, and I want to hear what they have to say about the movies. And it was so fun and helpful to me. It's a little bit like running into someone outside of a theater. You only have a couple of minutes, and they say a couple of things to you about the movie, and then you're off. And it was, you know, sort of a simulation of that experience. And so I like that that's available. I like that that's on there. There's a place for that. But I understand what you're saying, too, about how that, you know, I wouldn't want everything to be tiny and quick. And it's unfortunate that we only seem to have time for tiny and quick, which doesn't mean I want to read big blogs either. You know, it's just I don't know what the... There will not be a final decision on all of this stuff, but I just don't know exactly what I would prefer if I could design something from scratch, you know?
That's right.
I just don't know.
It's hard to sort of attach a sort of a moral value to it because it is kind of the way it is. Yeah, I remember, you know, if you had told me 10 years ago that cell phones would become primarily used to send short bursts of text, I would have thought you were insane. It's like, why would you type something out? Why not just call the person? But of course, as you have more and more people that you can potentially be in touch with instantaneously, that too becomes overwhelming. And you can't have conversations with all those people all the time and don't want to because that's too intense. Much easier to send a one-way text that, you know, is, again, you know, has to be short, has to be simple.
And that someone can skim at their leisure.
Yep.
And, yeah.
Yep. And that doesn't require, you know, like if you don't want to actually talk to someone about something, you send them a text. The problem then becomes, what if that's what we're doing in all of our forms of communication? Just, you know, sending short bursts of text.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Plastic Podcast. To find more episodes in this series of podcasts, go to iTunes and search for Plastic Podcast, and it should pop up. You can also go to dailyplastic.com, which is our home on the web. We'll be back in a couple of weeks to speak a little more slowly about some new movies. Bye.